This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, where I'm really hoping Corey does not restate that opinion and get people off on a tangent, because it's time for Puck Around and Find Out, Mike's in-person breakdown of Stars Golden Knights Game 1 and why the crowd wasn't that great, and maybe your predictions for the rest of the series. But in the meantime, let's go to cut number one, because, well, this was a theme for the night. It didn't take too long.
Long wrist shot.
Score! Deflected in front! Guess who? It's the captain, it looks like, Mark Stone! Welcome back, Mark Stone, and welcome to Game 1 of Vegas and Dallas.
Yay, the guy they used to help circumvent the salary cap scored a goal. The Stars lose Game 1. Mike, I don't know how much you want to dive into this one. We could talk about the game and the physicality battle that you were losing most of the night. But you said maybe you did not notice a big difference from regular season to playoff hockey.
I went to an Avalanche Stars game earlier in the year. I believe the final was 6-5 in overtime. It was a great game. I saw no difference in the atmosphere between that game and last night's game. Now, I do think this, the Stars giving up a goal less than 2 minutes into the game didn't help. The Stars getting down 2-0 didn't help. The Stars giving up a goal a minute and 5 seconds into the second period didn't help.
The goal disallowed.
Yeah. But I guess it was built up so much for a decade plus to me that playoff hockey. I'm telling you, there's nothing better than playoff hockey. And I was like, this seems like a regular season game. I mean, yes, the Stars put on different functions where they had like Dr. Doom or whatever doing things, and they tried to get the crowd fired up.
Right.
Did you sing Friends in Low Places with everybody?
I think that's kind of stupid during the playoffs.
Oh,
wow.
How come?
There's like 1 minute to go and there's a face-off on Vegas's side and they're playing like, hey, let's do a sing-along.
So this sounds like you're fundamentally, like, you might not agree with.
Let's do a sing-along with less than a minute to go, down by one. What is this, Sesame Street?
It's what they always do that.
But I don't. Does that seem like a good, like, let's just put ourselves on. Let's just put ourselves on the ice. Are you like, boy, I feel the energy in the building that we got Friends in Low Places with under a minute to go.
If you'd have scored a goal right then, that place would have lost its mind. But they got another, you know, here we go, just icing.
After Thompson missed the puck to give us a 4-3 situation.
Is that Marchment?
Yes. The last 5-plus minutes.
Yeah.
High energy, people were standing up. I met a Tolo Colby, who was in our section, our area, came by and said hello. I looked over to the right. He was having a blast, screaming, yelling, waving the Bill Winnington towel. But it was built up. And you know, when a movie's built up, this is going to be the best movie you've ever seen. And then you're like, well, it was good. It was good. And then the other thing too is, I'll just say this. I don't think Dallas will ever be a good environment.
And you don't think that's just for hockey either, do you?
I just think that we don't know any better. This is how if you grew up here and you've never been to a game in Philadelphia or Boston or New York or Kansas City for the Chiefs, or, you know, you've never been to any of these environments. To me, I thought the Braves' Saturday night game against the Rangers had more electricity in it than the Dallas Stars game one. Now, I'm not saying the Braves are the best fans in the world, but that was standing room only. And you could, the whole time, there was just this energy. And I'm way up top, but you're just like, dude, these people are into this game. This is just, I guess I shouldn't use Darnold coming up because he's going to hit a home run. But like, they're at the bottom of their lineup and they're like excited about this inning that they're coming up to hit. And for Rangers, I'm not trying to trash Stars fans or Ranger fans or anything, but we just don't really know. We don't know to stand up with two strikes and two outs in the second inning for a strikeout. We just don't know, because you grew up watching the game sitting down, and so we sit down. And Stars fans, no different. They're probably Dallas Maverick fans somewhat. They're probably Texas Ranger fans. See that. And so we've been brought up in our, and maybe in a good way, be very cordial fans. Golf clap when a couple things go right. Cheer when the person on the mic tells you to cheer. And then sit down and watch the game the rest of the time.
Is it, because this always comes up. And I don't think this is a unique problem to the Metroplex, but to be fair, I haven't not tried to attend a whole bunch of playoff games in other places. Is people always say the prices price out the hardcore fans. But I feel like, isn't that probably an issue for all teams or most other teams?
Maybe
as well?
Not. I was looking at this. My boys want to go to a Dallas Mavericks playoff game.
Okay.
I can't go. I'm working Rangers every game three, four, and six. I have a job. But they're old enough that I want to let them go. They can go by themselves. The tickets for game three and four here are upper deck, worst seats.
Yeah.
About $200 after fees per ticket.
Right.
Tonight, if you would like to see the Dallas Mavericks play the LA Clippers, I have here on ESPN, this is through Ticketmaster, tickets as low as $45 a seat. And Milwaukee tonight, Milwaukee's hosting the Pacers, tickets as low as $37 a seat. Ooh. So our tickets are about four to five times more a lot of other venues. Even the Timberwolves, right? How great are they doing? $70 tonight to go to the Timberwolves Suns game two. So
fascinating.
Our tickets are more expensive in Dallas. There's more people, more money in certain situations. Obviously, the Clippers aren't the Lakers, but I'm not saying it was bad. I don't want to come off as it was bad, but it was built up and it didn't live up to the expectation.
Yeah.
I mean, my first Stars playoff game, I think it was my first one, was last year against the Knights, the Jamie Benn game. And within 2 minutes, all the energy got sucked out of the place because Jamie Benn puts a hit on somebody and now he's gone. And you're like, hold on, we just lost the dude for the whole game because of that? And so I wanted to say, Mike, last night was a very unique situation and it doesn't happen that way. But it absolutely happened to us before. Maybe Vegas just knows how to come in and take the crowd completely out of a game because they were hitting you better than you could hit last night. You didn't even hit. You didn't even try.
No chippiness.
You just kind of were like, oh, you know what? I'm focusing on puck. And you know what? Maybe that's the proper thing to do. Focus on puck and move on about your business.
Because you're going to lose a physical battle.
Every once in a while, you got to pop back at somebody. Yeah. And they didn't. They weren't doing any of that. Nothing. And those are the things that liven up a crowd. Those are the things that get everybody going, okay, we're in this. We're actually fighting back here. And that wasn't happening last night.
I'll tell you what we did well, though. Boy, could we skate across the blue line faster than the puck. That was great. I mean, I was like, man, we are great at this offsides things. And I'll tell you what, can we ice a puck? I was calling it frosting at the end. I was like, I like frosting better than icing.
So, agreed. So, offsides was a problem. Icing or frosting was a problem. I want to say goaltending was a problem, but I also want to say don't box out or screen your own goalie, Miro. I'm not saying that Ottinger had a great game, but at least one of those goals, I was like, come on, dude. What are we doing here, Haskinen?
Yeah, and I mean, I give Vegas that credit, too, of they did a good job.
Ooh.
They beat your ass last night.
That's true.
Like, they beat your ass fairly last night. So
it's one game. Are they better than us?
They are better.
Wait. Hold on.
They're the champs.
This looks similar.
Hold on.
It looks almost exactly the same.
This is what I want to throw out to potentially counteract that. If it weren't for Vegas is always going to be the more physical team than you. In this series. I'm not disputing that at all. If it weren't for the poor play by Ottinger, the box outs by their own defensemen that led to some of these goals, would you not have looked at this game from puck control, from aggression on net, from shots on net, and say, this was the Stars' game?
I guess they did have more shots on goal.
Twice as much. Like, literally
twice. Does it count when the puck's going 14 miles an hour and the goalie then just gets it and scoops it to his guy?
Because I don't have a breakdown of what I would call quality chances. Yeah. I'll see if I can look into that. But I do think in terms of puck possession, in terms of aggression towards the net, in terms of shot on goal, I did think the Stars look like the better team. Okay. I know that's hard to argue.
I'm not
when you
argue.
Lose 4-2.
I guess being there, maybe it just didn't feel like there were a lot of. I guess I didn't feel like there was a lot more opportunities. The other thing too is I felt like
way.
At 4-2, after two, Vegas was doing a great job of like, we're not going to allow them to get a lot of runs. We're dumping. We're substituting. We're going to stay fresh. We're going to. You know, like they weren't really trying to score, I would say, in the third period, but they did a great job of milking the clock.
Yeah, and Vegas's defensive setup is kind of unique and different. More teams are trying to do it. They're trying to accomplish it right now, but Vegas is really good at it, and they protect the front part of their net very well. And it gives the Stars fits. It did last year,
yes.
And it's given them fits right now, and they're having to figure out ways to find the right angles, because when they try to center that puck, there's somebody there. It's kind of like a zone, the way that it's built, and they do a good job of protecting their net whenever it's time to protect it.
The thing that's got to change, and like if people want to give your predictions for the rest of the series, I definitely want to hear that. Thing that's got to change is special teams, and I would have thought for sure going into this series, one humongous advantage that the Stars would have had is on special teams. But look at what happens last night. Stars 0-2 on the power play. Not particularly captivating on the power play either. Vegas scores on both of their power plays. During the regular season, Vegas was 20th in power play conversions. 20th! The Stars, their penalty kill, 8th best. Mm. So you're taking a below average power play team versus a very much above average penalty kill. And then you watch the game and you're like, never mind.
Here's what's the other frustrating part, Kevin, because it compiles with what you just said. Very much like the Mavericks against the Clippers. The Clippers came out defensively. They were in your face immediately. Every time you turned around, there was somebody there. And Vegas had somebody. The Mavericks and Stars were both passive to start these series.
They were
very passive, and I don't know if it's to collect information to see how your defense is setting up against you, or if they just didn't expect their opponent to come out the same way. But Vegas was on the puck. Every time you got the puck, they were there. And if they weren't right there, they were going to hit you whenever you release the puck. So that's the other part. Aggressive nature, being prepared for that moment, that's something that's got to change. That starts, for me, that's coaching. That's getting your guys' mindsets the right way.
When you guys were talking about the defensive setup for the Golden Knights, let me ask you a question. I wouldn't have thought this going into the playoffs, and it's just one game. Could one of the strengths of the Stars in the regular season actually be problematic here? The Stars had 26 come-from-behind wins, most in franchise history. That was half of their wins in the regular season, and that's great, but I wonder if you see a defensive shift altogether, or if this is just not the team to do that against, because as you pointed out, it's like 90 seconds into the game, you're already losing. And that feels like that will be harder to overcome, not just against this series, but if you move on. And this is something the Stars were great at in the regular season.
I don't have strong opinions. Obviously, I've gotten into hockey, but I don't understand it nearly as well as I'd like to understand it. All I can say is watching the playoffs last year and trying to remember what I saw from this series, it looked the same. It looked like they just played games, whatever. We lost in 5 or 6 last
year.
Six. That looked like game 7 of the playoff series, and you're just like, yeah, they're just better.
Yeah.
They're just better. I hope I'm wrong. Because
last year I definitely thought
because
that
the Stars
too.
Are better this year, at least record-wise they're better. A lot of stats say they're better, but you know, I didn't know until before the show started how Vegas was able to cheat. But I guess it's not cheating. I don't know why the Stars don't do it, but
it's a great question. By the way, and because, Corey, I know you'd brought this up in the past, I'll just argue circumventing the salary cap is they will. Mark Stone has come up on this twice, the guy who scored the first goal, and their captain on the long-term injury list. And when you put somebody on the long-term injury list, that gives you salary cap relief. And so what Vegas did, what I think this year they ended up picking up 3 players in the meantime to kind of fill that salary cap void. And then there's no salary cap in the postseason. So what do you know, last year, just like this year, when it's time for the playoffs, hey,
They have extra guys.
Mark Stone is ready to play again.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what about all these guys that you got with his money? Doesn't matter. No salary cap in the playoffs anymore. I'm conflicted because if the Stars did it, I would be like, brilliant maneuvering. As a team who might have done that to beat the Stars, I'm like, son of a gun.
Yeah, and you're also conflicted because the rules are the rules.
Yes,
and
they are.
Like, you got to follow the rules, and these guys just have, they found the loophole, they obliterate it, and they use it to their advantage, and it's smart move, man. I wish other sports were like that. I wish the Cowboys could do that, because then you have all this cap space at the end of the year.
Corey, I don't know if you've heard this. You have a set cap space for 5 years.
No, at the end of the year, you have lots of cap space, and then you can just add on to it and then beat the Packers.
What about at the end of the day?
Well, I really want to know what happens at the beginning of the day, Kevin.
Hey, we're going to have Stephen Jones on later. I want you to ask a question like that.
Let's go.
Over under, number of questions Michael asked to Stephen Jones at 0.5.
I have questions, but I know they'll tick him off tremendously.
Well, who cares?
Oh, God.
As long as they're fair. Coming up next.
I can preview it on our show, and then we can ask people if they're fair.
That's a great point. I actually would be oddly intrigued by that segment. Coming up next, let's talk about the NBA playoffs in general. The Lakers go down in flames, plus the Players Anonymous playoff poll. We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
Murray makes a move. There's a...
Absolutely unbelievable end to that game. Mike, the Lakers were 20-0 this season when they led by 20 points at any point in the game.
It was like the Josh Howard scoring 20.
Yes. And then I'm glad. It didn't work out for them. And I wanted to throw this out there because Jamal Murray is the guy who took over the fourth quarter. 14 points, hit the game winner. Jokic finished with 27 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists. That is a unique stat line in playoff history. And then the 20-20-10 stat line tied with Wilt Chamberlain at 4 times he's done that in the playoffs for the most ever. So incredible. Also, 10 straight playoff games the Nuggets have beat the Lakers. They own that franchise right now.
Even though the Lakers have had
opportunities. Yes, in both games.
In Denver, which I've been surprised with. To be honest, I've been surprised with. The gambler's brother is having a really good series, making some really big three-pointers.
Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah. This does look like, to me, I hate the Lakers. I hate them more than any sports franchise in sports. Do look like, I know I said sports.
No, go ahead. Okay.
It made me chuckle.
Yeah.
But they do look like they're going to go back to L.A. and possibly win both games. At least how well they played in Denver at times.
Yeah, I could see that.
Where, like, right now, you look at the Mavericks. Hopefully everything changes tonight. The Mavericks played bad, to be nice with my wording, for pretty much the whole game until the game was completely and totally over. And you're like, all right, man, they really Dak Prescott that one in the fourth quarter. You know, really raise their stats, right? Because right now, if I go back and I look at Dak versus Green Bay, man, his stats were good. Why is everybody cracking on Dak? And if you looked at Luka and Kyrie's stats in game one, you're like,
they did a good job. Yeah, yeah.
33, 13, and 6 or whatever it ended up being. Like, that's a good game, right? You're like, did you watch the game?
It was an incredible set of, and I know Sean mentioned this during the morning show. It was an incredible set of games back-to-back because you also saw Philly just, I don't know what they were doing at the end of that game and put themselves in a 2-0 hole.
Is Philly, are they toast
here?
They're
done. That's just my opinion.
I didn't get to watch any of this because I was at the Stars. I saw the line for Embiid, 34 points. Did he have 12 rebounds, I think? I'm going off the top of my head on the bottom line. Okay. Those are very impressive numbers. Yeah. The way he looked in the last game, like, he didn't look close to 100%. I guess he's like at 60%. Did he look closer to 100% in this game?
Yeah, I think so. But, like, even then, I would say, is that mean 80%? Like, I thought he looked good.
If he's close to 100%, I won't totally give up on Philly making this a really tough series. But if he's not close to 100%, because they can go back to Philadelphia, if Embiid's going to get you 30-plus, if Maxey's going to get you right around 30, I think they can win both games in Philadelphia. But I'm not. I didn't watch the game, so I'm asking people who watched the game.
I will tell you this. I love Tyrese Maxey. We had him on the show. He was awesome. South Garland, he was a mess.
100% from the free throw.
30 seconds.
Maybe he needs to just get to the line then.
He turned the ball over. He also had a miss that led to the Knicks outscoring the 76ers 8-0 in the last 30 seconds. They were losing by 5 points, and they went on an 8-0 run in the last 30 seconds. Tyrese Maxey, he's still awesome, but man, that was a tough.
Did he have a good game? I mean, like, you look at
his
the rest of it.
Good.
Yeah.
The rest of it, you're like, man, he was out there hustling.
I agree, but I feel like I'm going to say no, which because sounds of that. Crazy because, look, it's a team game, but I think you can point to some of those plays down the stretch and be like, that kind of led to the loss. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right. The rest of the game doesn't matter. It's everything within the last, and that's a reality.
Depending on the flow of the game,
if the score is late, if the score is close late in games, I mean that's one of the things I feel like I see Jason Kidd wanting. He wants it to be closer than 27 or something, you know, late in the game. He's like, hey, can we be like within 10? You know, we can do something. I can make some defensive stops happen here if we can just be that close. But because I do think that the Mavs team can make the offensive things happen to bring them back there. But I understand what you're saying. Whenever you're that close in a game, those very tiny details are big factors.
I wanted to kick around something else and see if you guys were surprised at all by this. I think The Athletic usually does a very good job with the player anonymous at the All-Star break or going into the playoffs. Well, they picked up the NBA player anonymous going into the playoffs. 141, excuse me. Players voted in this. Who is the MVP?
Of the league?
Of the league.
Luka.
Well, no, it's Jokic.
Where does Luka finish?
Can I say I listened to Sean and RJ, so I can't.
Okay, Corey,
I gotcha.
You're up.
Just like Dak, second.
Unfortunately.
Wow.
And it's not.
The league hates Luka.
Well, and it's not that he finished third. It's how far back he is. So Jokic, 42%. I'm rounding up. Shea, 37%. Luka, 10%.
So here's where I think they voted. I need to pull this up. Schedule. They didn't ask this at the end of the year. They didn't ask this close to the end of the year. I bet they asked this with about 10 games left in the season. And so if I take out the last 10 games of the season, the Mavs were still in the play-in situation.
March 5th through April 11th. The timeline.
So if you want to just knock this out as a player, right, and just like, hey, I got this email. I don't know how people are. If I don't respond to the email immediately or the text message immediately, I will totally forget. Sure. There's too many things going on in my life that I'm not going to remember 2 days from now to respond to that email. I've gotten 100 more things that now are on my plate. So I'm just wondering, if you respond on March 5th, the Mavericks are on March 5th, they lose to the Pacers and are 34-28, and they have lost 5 of 6 games. Now, after that, they go on a tremendous run. So if you vote on April 11th, they're 50-30. Think about voting for Luka in that stretch and when you voted. If you voted at the very beginning or the very end, on how much that can change your voting.
You're definitely right about that. I wanted to build in another question because it kind of trickles over into this. You're building a roster from scratch. There no player belongs to any team. Who are you taking first? Who are you signing?
I guess Jokic. Because he can be the guy that distributes the ball. He can be the guy that scores the ball. And he can be the guy that rebounds the ball.
And he should have 10 more years in the league, I think, at his age.
And he's a mismatch problem for everybody.
It's very close. He's second.
I know, it's Wimby's one. I'm scared to death he's going to Ralph Sampson his career. I really do. And if people don't know this, Ralph Sampson was Wembanyama in 1982. And the Lakers were trying to do everything possible to get him before they got James Worthy. It's in the book Showtime. They made the show about it.
They had to change the name of.
They never got into it on the HBO show. But in the book, Ralph Sampson decides not to go into that draft because he's scared to death of going to the Clippers. Every player did not want to go to the San Diego / Los Angeles Clippers. They just thought it was such a pathetic franchise. Like, I can't take the risk that I'm going to go to the Clippers. He ends up going to the Rockets, totally changes that franchise, and then they get Hakeem a year or two later, and it really totally changes. But big guys like Bill Walton and Ralph Sampson, it just seems like, as great as he is, I'd be scared to take somebody that tall, that thin. And I get how great he is. If you're a Spurs fan, I'm not trying to take anything away from you. He looks like an unbelievably great player. I just worry that his foot's going to break and he's going to have, you know, some sort of issue that all of these really big guys seem to have.
Now, Mike, with that, do you get any level of solace seeing the ways the modern medicine has changed? And I don't say that just generally. I always think about, like, the Jones fracture, that fifth metatarsal that happens in the foot. We've seen KD go through that and still be able to come back. And he looks largely like what he looked like before with, a little bit less speed. But that feels like that's more the Achilles injuries than it is the foot injuries.
I don't know. You're making a great point. I don't know. You're making a good point. I'd have to really look into the dudes that end up being 7'2" and 112 pounds, like how they end up like doing over the last 10 to 15 years. And I know Wimby's probably, 220 at best?
Right.
But I think he would be a top pick. I would just worry the most about his injuries. And I know he's not been hurt yet, but even the Spurs are really slow playing his career.
He's also listed at 210.
That thing clearly has youth and like upside.
Yeah, and because Anthony Edwards is third, and then Luka is fourth.
And a different, like, it's something unique that nobody else is, like, with him at this point.
This is without a doubt my favorite question because of the answers. Who is the greatest player of all time?
Huh? Steve DeBerg.
No, in the NBA.
Here's what we have to recognize. Almost every player was born at the latest 1990.
Yep.
Most of these players have been born from about 1998 to 2004.
Right. Definitely.
They never saw a second of Michael Jordan. So when people ask us about Wilt Chamberlain, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Pete right. Maravich, Oscar Robertson, Jerry West. I don't know, man. I wasn't around for any of it. Now, you do get to go back more and watch Michael Jordan than you can the players that were in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. There was more games televised. But I'm going to assume that LeBron's going to be number one because none of these players ever were alive for Michael Jordan.
LeBron James, second on the list. He's got 42%. Michael Jordan has 46%. Kobe has 10%.
Yikes.
That's all fine and well.
Anthony Edwards, number five?
No.
Or number four?
But is it that much more ridiculous? So three players got 0.8%. Which means they got one vote. Stephen Curry, fine. Magic Johnson, and Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce! Got a vote.
I think Paul George voted for
the greatest NBA player of all time.
Wow.
Did they ask Paul Pierce?
I don't think so because these are active players.
Okay.
Magic Johnson, one person. Paul Pierce, same.
I love that one person that voted for Magic. Like, they're like, I know who I'm, a real hoop head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but people don't
nobody
give
knows
Magic
like
enough.
Me.
People don't give enough Magic. Like, that's a real contrarian vibe that I can get with.
Nobody voted for Wilt Chamberlain.
Nobody voted for Wilt Chamberlain.
You just look at the stats. They're Babe Ruthian stats.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know. I
think the film's the same, too.
You can't. Yeah, you can't really watch in his prime. You can't watch any of it. They didn't have basketball games on television when he was with Philadelphia Fart Knockers, whatever they were called.
So fast down the court.
They weren't the 76ers.
The Warriors?
Yeah. So you don't know. You get him as an older guy on the Lakers, and he's still good. Don't get me wrong, but it's like us growing up with Kareem. Kareem was a shell of himself by the time the Celtics and Lakers became major rivals, and Magic and Larry, Kareem wasn't the same anymore. He was still really good, but it's like watching LeBron now and saying, "This is LeBron James."
He's still
like,
really good.
Well, he's really good, but he's not
way better.
Yeah. I can't believe Tim Duncan's not on that. Didn't get one vote.
56% of the folks said Nuggets will win the title. 34% Celtics. Everybody else, a low number. One person voted for the Dallas Mavericks. But you couldn't vote for your own team. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bashak.
Do the Rangers have the inside edge against the Mariners? Next.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through the Fan. Right now, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bashak.
The Rangers had a really big off day because after 17 games in a row and a schedule that wasn't favorable to them,
right,
they really needed an off day.
Okay, yeah.
So I think, once again, I'll repeat myself a little bit from yesterday, but going 5-5 on that road trip, especially the schedule that was kind of put up against you, wasn't a bad road trip. Yeah. I'm not saying it was a great road trip, but it was not a bad result to go 5-5, losing Cody Bradford on the trip. You just look at it and go, okay, I'll take it. Now they come back home against the Mariners, and getting to do the new job that I'm doing in the television broadcast, I get some inside numbers.
Okay.
I'm not doing the broadcast for the Mariners series. I have the Cincinnati series. I have pre and post on Friday, Sunday. Saturday's another nationally televised game. Like, the Rangers are getting nationally televised
as
tremendously. So this is from the website Inside Edge.
Okay.
So I think this is a really fun website. Now, I'm not taking advantage of this website probably enough, like doing kind of searches as well as I should. I'm just learning these awesome websites that give you a lot of stuff. But here's some basic things they give about some of the Texas Rangers players that I think are kind of interesting, but audience, respond, whether you're on Twitch right now on the text line.
FrankleFirm.com text line.
Thank you.
877-881-1053.
If you're like, this is too inside stuff. This isn't, like, in a way, like, I'd rather have kind of your basic stats, OPS, okay, or just batting average against lefties or something like that. Corey Seager is slugging .620. That's slugging. 237 total bases and 382 at-bats against right-handed pitchers since last season. That's third best in Major League Baseball. League average is .442. So he's a .620 slug. League average is .442. I find that's tremendous.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I think as Inside Edge continues throughout the season, remember, there's only about 20 to 25 games played from teams right now. So they're usually combining last year's numbers at times with this year's numbers. Sometimes they'll just do this numbers, but Corey Seager against right-handed pitchers is one of the best, if not arguably the best hitter in all of baseball. Hopefully his slugging starts picking up. We really need that ball to start getting out of the ballpark and extra base hits for Corey Seager. He's having a good start to the year, but not a great start because of the lack of power right now. Marcus Semien, this is a good question to now go on. How long will this continue for the Rangers, him batting first? Is averaging just 3.08 pitches per plate appearance against right-handed pitchers this season. Second lowest in the American League.
Ooh, okay.
So you've coupled that with...
And it doesn't say for just leadoff hitters, right? He's averaging 3.08 pitches per plate appearance against right-handed pitchers this season. Second lowest in the American League. Do you want... I'm not knocking Semien, man. He's a Silver Slugger, Gold Glove Award winner, but... You have a guy in Evan Carter who's a little bit different, who I'll get to another inside edge number with him. Do you care that your leadoff hitter doesn't see pitches?
Well, again, when you couple that with Corey Seager, who sees 1 to 2 pitches, it feels like you're getting a few and you're starting the game off giving the pitcher fresh legs and a fresh arm. So I kind of do, but if he's going to rock home runs and RBI, then I'm perfectly okay with it when you swing back around.
We have to have the two most aggressive 1-2 hitters in all of baseball, right?
I could see that without having done the breakdown study.
I should research that.
Have you seen the passing piece on Corey Seager yet?
The perfect, I actually had to say sorry to him because he was well before the game in Atlanta. I was walking back through the dugout and he was in the tunnel with a camera, and he was like, he was picturing his swing.
Yeah.
He was like this article in passing, just giving a little bit more information to it. And you can explain it a little bit more, but he was like getting set and everything and feeling what looks perfect and everything to his setup.
Yeah, the line that kind of sticks out, Kevin, is would you rather have the right pitch or the perfect swing? And he said, I'll take the perfect swing every time.
Yeah.
That's the swing is more important than the right pitch, that fastball I'm looking for. I'm just going to swing. The swing is going to make the most of it.
All right, so I know Evan Carter's not off to the best start, but he did have really nice defensive plays on Sunday, had a big home run to get the Rangers on the board on Sunday, third home run of the year. Evan Carter has drawn 5 walks in 20 plate appearances in his first plate appearance of the game this season, 4th best in Major League Baseball. So I don't know. I'm not saying they should move tonight, Evan Carter to leadoff spot, but it's just interesting when sometimes you look at Simeon's RBI totals from a leadoff spot, and then you look at Evan Carter's plate discipline from being all around the lineup, and you go, I wonder if Simeon batted third. I mean, I'm just throwing this out as a question. If Simeon batted third and he's getting 102 RBIs from the leadoff spot, what if Carter and Seager were hitting in front of him?
Yeah, then he would be with all these singles from Seager.
Right, he's relying on Leody Taveras and Wyatt Langford has moved down to 7th. He's relying on those guys to get on base so he has RBI opportunities. And the Rangers last year did a great job of that. So far this year they're doing a solid job of it, but I just think of some of these numbers and go, I wonder how much you play with the lineup as the season progresses. Next one. Are you guys liking these or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Adolis Garcia. This was shocking to me.
No.
I'm just joking. Like,
he's batting just 184 in his first plate appearance of the game since last season. 5th lowest in Major League Baseball. League average is 260. Would you ever guess that Adolis Garcia gets out so much his first at bat?
I think that's a great step then, because then would you take a look at it and be like, hey, should we adjust your first at bat, what you're doing with those?
No, I see it that he goes up there and he gets ticked off that he whatever outed, popped out or struck out, and he's ticked off about it, and then he's
that's
more focused on.
That's what drives the rest.
Yeah, it's the more. Okay. It's kind of like Luka losing game one. Now he's more focused today.
28 of 152 in his first at bat.
Mm. It's not
so
good.
So last year and this year combined. Obviously, he's had days where he's had days off, days where he's been hurt. So 28 of 152, 184 batting average.
Okay, he was really good with runners in scoring position last year.
Yeah.
And
this year, pretty good too, I think.
I wonder if more runners are in scoring position for his first at bat, if he's better.
I don't know.
I'd love to dive in on that a little more.
So anyways, this is from Inside Edge. And then the last one I'll give you, this is really like way inside, as in, like, is this matter too much? Wyatt Langford has missed on just 18% of swings against breaking balls away this season. 10th best in Major League Baseball. He's 6 out of 34, so he's missed 6 out of the 34. League average is you miss that ball 37% of the time, and he's only missing it 18%.
So like half.
So anyways, a little bit of inside kind of information on your Texas Rangers that are just way more inside stats than what maybe are normal stats. And those are really fun to look at before games.
And I was going
to
say, I think that really is interesting because the club's looking at those. The broadcasters are looking at those.
Yeah.
Like, you feel not on even footing, but you feel like, hey, I know what's up.
And then my last question for Baseball Nuggets today is, the Rangers are one game above 500. The Seattle Mariners are 500. Series starts tonight. By the way, there is an inside edge number. Don't expect Logan Gilbert to walk anybody first time through the lineup. He just doesn't. He's the best in baseball.
Okay.
And the first 9 batters he faces, usually not walking any of them. Is if I put an over-under at 86 wins to win the division, do you think if the Rangers get to 86 wins, 86 and 76, do you think this year it wins the West?
Oh, man, that's an interesting one.
I say no. I don't think you might be far off with that number. I just, at some point, I think somebody's got to emerge as better. So I think that number's too low, but I totally understand your question and why people might disagree.
I think you need to put that at 87.
Just to give you an idea, last year, the Minnesota Twins won their division at 87 wins.
Okay.
But the team behind them, Detroit, had 78 wins. So now I know that it would, so you could say 79 wins could have won that division. That was the worst division in the American League. If I go to the second place team in the Central in the National League, the Cubs won 83 games. Now, Brewers won 92, but 84 would have won that division. In a way, I get that you'd start adding wins to, like, the Cubs because you got to subtract wins away from the Brewers. So if you give some of those to the Cubs, they'd win more games. And then in the National League West last year, because the Dodgers ran away with it with 100 wins, the Diamondbacks barely made the playoffs with 84 wins. So 85 would have won that division. But to your point, teams started running away. Minnesota started running away. Milwaukee started running away. The Dodgers ran away early, and nobody could catch them. But I just kind of looking at this division, and I kind of with you, one team will start, but I don't think it's going to be the Astros.
I don't either.
Like, I think the Astros are really hoping 84 or 85 wins the division because I think that's maybe their mark when I'm watching them play.
We're all just chasing Baltimore anyway. So,
well, I agree. But I think in our division, I do think Seattle, I do think at this point it is more of a Seattle, Texas. I don't want to count out. I'm not trying to count out the other three teams. I can count out Oakland unless you get to the eighth inning. The game's absolutely over at that point. They do throwing 258 miles an hour and it's over. But anyways, I just think about that, Ranger fans. Is last year it was 90. You lost the tiebreaker. I don't think it's going to be 90 this year.
Wow. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, Corey wants me to rephrase this. Is this the playoff curse of the Rangers?
We're cursed. Thanks a lot, Rangers.
But it's totally worth it, right?
I'll take it.
Next on The Fan.